Say, kids, what time is it? Oh, I've done that joke before. It's time for the Rish Outcast. This is Rish Outfield. And, gosh, I'm pretty excited about this episode. But in the spirit of full disclosure, as they say in the movies, which I never really understand what that means, but in that spirit, the story I'm about to present to you, Beggar's Canyon, is also available, or will soon be available, over at the Delusions of Grandeur podcast. Now, that's the Star Wars-related podcast that Marshall Latham and I do, and that is a podcast where every once in a while we get together and we talk about Star Wars, and because we live over 1,000 miles apart, we don't actually get together. But I did a recording of this story and I sent it to Marshall and said, you can do whatever you want with it. If you want to do a voice, you can do that. If you want to do sound effects, you can do that. If you want to do music, you can do that, etc., etc. But I'm going to do it on my own show, just, you know, as a straight read, as they say. Probably the same people that say, in the spirit of full disclosure. I don't know who they is. Maybe it's audiobook people. But this is just me, and I think I'm going to split the episode in two. I'm going to split the story in two, because it's kind of long. So if you want to go over to Delusions of Grandeur and hear the two of us talk about it, I'm sure Marshall will have insights that I don't have, and I'm fairly certain he'll just run the whole story rather than break it up. So if you're curious how things get changed or how you can talk about different stuff with one more person in the virtual room, then go check that out.
Oh my, it seems the Delusions of Grandeur podcast has relocated itself to the Journey Into podcast. www.journeyintopodcast.blogspot.com.
But if you're still here with me, then I'm excited to bring this story to you. It is, as you've probably guessed, a Star Wars-related story. Well, you know what? It's self-explanatory. Except for, and I probably will include it in the recording itself, it comes with the caveat that this was written with the mindset that the prequel movies never happened. So the things that are revealed in those prequel movies, that some of them line up, some of them don't, do not apply in this movie. Sorry, in this story. So, you know, you can say, well, but, if you like, but your protestations will fall on deaf ears. Because maybe when you're listening to this, there are movies since Return of the Jedi. But when I'm recording this, it's just those three movies. So anyhow, hopefully you will enjoy. I will meet you on the other side. And may the podcast be with you.
Beggar's Canyon by Rish Outfield. Note. This tale exists in the fabled world of 1995, where Star Wars was a trilogy. No one had ever heard of a midichlorian, where Han shot first, where all was right, in a galaxy far, far away. Not much was going on at Anchorhead, but that was typical. It was the only settlement of any size this side of the Dune Sea, and the only things that ever happened there were shipments coming in, vehicles to be fixed or overhauled, and the occasional bounty hunter there to ask questions or tell their tales in the 9, count 'em 9, bars the town offered. Tank claimed to have once seen a droid bounty hunter walking around Yaden's place, but Luke and Biggs didn't really believe him. A droid would make a terrible bounty hunter. Anchorhead was a boring place, even by Tatooine standards, but at night, it could get dangerous. Luke's parents and the Darklighters had insisted their boys be home within half hour of sunsdown. Garak and Haga Darklighter were vegetable growers, with 6 Floridomes on their property halfway to the sea, But Luke's family, as well as his buddy Tank's parents, were moisture farmers, using large stationary evaporators to collect water from the ground and air for use all over the region. Tank's folks had a big stretch on the north end of the sea, and Luke's aunt and uncle, the Larses, had a small settlement on the south side, where nothing grew. The Tanks did well, as his parents had 6 boys and 2 girls, and all did their share. But the Larses were poor, childless, with only Luke, the intermittent hired hand, and rattletrap droids to run everything. Luke's own parents were dead, and Uncle Owen didn't like to talk about them. Luke had learned early on not to ask questions about it, unless Owen had been drinking. And even then, only when he was in the sweet spot between mildly intoxicated and rip-roaring drunk. Times like that, and Owen's grouchy, rough exterior melted away, and he'd talk about how life used to be, when Aunt Beru had been young and beautiful, and they'd been eager to start a family. But she'd lost 2 babies, and was told she would die if they tried for more. And then Luke came, sounding almost like a sudden delivery at their door or something. And they had their son after all. Luke was a good boy, but small and scrawny. Not a farmer, but a dreamer, a thinker. And nothing like Owen, who only felt alive when he was toiling, and so tired that all his problems faded into the heat shimmers on the horizon. And during those surreal, brief conversations, Luke would ask about his mother, and hear words like,
"A lovely lady, smart as a whip, little like you," and "political."
But when the subject was broached about Anakin Skywalker, Luke's father and Beru's younger brother, Owen would get vague.
"He had a temper, but you didn't see it unless you really pushed him. He was a hothead, never thinking before he did something. He went out there with the Jedi, meddling where he didn't belong. And conversely, he fought and hated the Jedi till it killed him."
Contradictions that Luke had to chalk up to faulty alcohol or a faulty memory. Luke was poor, and he was a dreamer, always hoping for adventure or excitement around the next corner. He felt in his heart that he was intended for something important, that he would find the thing that made him special and use it to help himself and his family. And when he was 14 years old, he thought he'd finally found it. He and Tank were at Anchorhead, working in a makeshift garage that was really part of the junkyard owner's shop. They were fixing up Luke's old T-08 Dune Hopper, which was always breaking down and held together with whatever spare pieces they could trade or scrounge up. Luke and his friends had rebuilt it after it had been wrecked 2 or 3 years before, and it always seemed to want to go back to the scrapyard from where it came. The main stabilizer had gone out, and it was unsafe to fly, but they'd brought it here anyway, and were jury-rigging 2 small land speeder stabilizers together to replace it. It worked in theory, and the boys were crazy enough to try it. Luke was yawning as he welded 2 couplers end to end, and Tank was talking about girls. He was 15, and liked girls as much as he did speeders. Luke was still not sure what his opinion was, though he enjoyed listening to his friends talk. Luke was only able to come to town when his work on the farm was done, so his spare time was often limited, maybe 2 hours, maybe 1. Neb Kofi was the first to arrive with the news.
"Hey, sand fleas," he mocked, entering the garage without preamble. "You know how you're so eager to be rid of me?"
"Yes,"
they both said together. Kofi was a blowhard, the nephew of the owner of Naissance Metals, the restealing centers all across the Outer Rim. He always had the newest of everything, and a relatively easy life, for Tatooine anyway. He was arrogant, and told stories about his grandfather's exploits in the Clone Wars. He had been a general, to hear Kofi tell it, though his 2 sisters claimed he'd flown an escort ship. Kofi had a sharp tongue, and loved to point out the character defects in those around him. He'd apparently been born absolutely devoid of tact. And yet he still made time with every pretty girl this side of Mos Eisley. Must have been the T-18 Skyhopper he flew, its engines deliberately narrowed and deafening. Right now, he was getting his Skyhopper repainted in reflective metal of all colors, and stepped over to share whatever exciting news he'd gotten.
Arno Skovla is having a Winter's Day race. Just announced it. Anybody can enter. Just gotta have a flyer.
Every year, one of the planet's twin suns would pass behind the other in their parallel orbit, and it would seem like there was only one sun. Some comedian, 100 years back, had called it the winter season, since it caused a minor change in temperature, for almost a day.
Prize money?
Tank asked.
It's all sponsored, if you can believe it. Winner gets a trip for two to Organa Major on Alderaan, as well as enough credits to spend a month there.
Luke's breath caught in his chest. Alderaan wasn't just a faraway world. It was a central planet, one of those people used as an extreme, with Tatooine on the other end. He had long wanted to visit there, more so even than the other, more touristy planets closer by.
Second place gets a skyhopper, Kofi said. Just like mine. Let me guess, your uncle is one of the sponsors?
Tank asked. Kofi shrugged.
Fourth place is a metallurgic overhaul of your home or vehicle, yes.
They do races all the time in the cities, Luke said. Where are they doing this one?
Dune Sea, right where you park your Banthas.
Neb Kofi liked to make insinuations that Luke, Biggs, Chanty, Vale, and Tank were all illegitimate children of sand people, the nomadic creatures that lived out in the deserts, occasionally raiding settlements or stealing livestock. The boys always ignored these taunts, although Tank had bloodied Kofi's nose for him once after a particularly nasty barb. Luke almost never saw the rich boy anymore, now that he was out of school. He'd been shuttling in to classes with his friends until the last season, when a sandstorm had wrecked most of Owen's equipment, and a lot of what machines used to do, Luke now did. The amazing thing was how good-natured Luke was, even with all these struggles. Biggs was still in school, and quite popular with the girls. Tank had toys and free time to work on them, but Luke was still the cheeriest of their group, eager to help, content to work on other people's speeders and skyhoppers, happy to listen to someone else's tale of romance and adventure. But the thing he was really good at was flying, maneuvering a craft, even on the wastes where there were canyons and rock formations that could snag or crush a craft going regular speed.
What are the requirements to enter?
Kofi sneered.
I already told you. You don't qualify, though. You gotta have your own hopper.
Tank has one.
Tank has a tank. The septic kind.
Biggs has a T-16.
Uh-huh,
the rich boy said, as though he had anticipated this.
And Biggs will want to race in it.
Tank stood up. He had quit school 2 months before and was now working long hours in his free time for the Fixer, a mechanic who'd just opened up shop in Anchorhead. He was a hard worker, but not particularly bright.
What do you care, Sunstroke? You worried Luke would trounce you in a fair race?
Kofi's eyes narrowed. He was educated, well-to-do, and clean, while Tank and Luke were poor, average, and covered in grease.
I'm going to win that prize, children. If the two of you are also in the race, more the better.
Luke tried to hide his excitement, but
thanks for telling us,
still slipped out. Kofi studied him, gauging whether that was an insult of some kind.
You missed a spot,
he said, pointing to the wall behind them. Puzzled, they turned their heads, and when they turned back, Neb Kofi was gone. Guess he'd shown them. They chatted excitedly for 2 or 3 more minutes, until they heard the unmistakable hum of Biggs' Darklighter's speeder. Biggs was a little over a year older than Luke, and his dark hair and square jaw had drawn the gaze of all the ladies. Biggs all but leapt out of the cockpit and ran into the garage.
Guys, you'll never guess what's happening.
There's going to be a race on Winter's Day,
Tank suggested.
And we're going to enter it, added Luke.
And you're in love with an Ithorian?
Tank couldn't help but throw in.
Yes,
Biggs admitted, deflating just a bit.
Except for the last part. How did you know?
Luke shrugged.
Oh, Neb Kofi came by to insult us about it.
Is that what he was doing?
Tank asked Luke.
He's not very good at it.
Is Neb going to race then? Biggs asked, glancing over the couplers they had attached, checking the seams. He and Kofi were not friendly either, since they usually pursued the same girls. And although Biggs had the looks, Kofi had the money.
Apparently the race is open to all species,
Tank explained, which Biggs didn't get.
What's he flying?
T-18. Getting it painted. Mirror coat.
Biggs grimaced. Luke and Tank, and Vale and Shanty, for that matter, were able to shrug off anything Kofi said to them. But Biggs always felt he had to compete with him, show him up someday, and actually seemed to care what the braggart thought.
Well, the race is through the whole eastern loop of Beggar's Canyon. We've done that before.
Yes, and wrecked 2 hoppers, Tank reminded him. And that was doing it alone.
We were kids then. I'm 16.
Luke narrowed his eyes.
You're 16 next month, and we're still kids.
Biggs thought about that for a minute.
Kids or not, we know that canyon, and we're good flyers.
Tank nodded, but he had the worst track record when it came to vehicles. He'd once crashed a vegetable hauler.
I want to race, sure,
Tank said.
But don't you have to be older to sign up for this thing? Like a grown-up?
We just have to get our parents' permission, Biggs said. And as he said it, he realized just how unlikely that was. Luke's folks were demanding and strict, but Biggs's parents coddled him, checked everything he did, insisted he calm them any time he went anywhere, any time he did anything, even when he was with a girl. He might be in trouble here.
My folks will be okay with it,
Tank said.
Luke?
I don't have a flyer, but I'll be happy to help with yours.
A few minutes later, they exited the little garage and loaded up their parts into Tank's father's landspeeder. Tank usually drove Luke back to the Lars homestead that way, even though it was a real junker that actually took a few seconds to hover when he started it. But it was still better than nothing, which was what Luke had.
What do you think, Biggs?
Luke asked his friend before he headed for his flyer. Biggs didn't have to ask what Luke was talking about.
Yeah, it'll be all right.
But it was not all right. Biggs's parents absolutely refused. He had a cousin who had died threading the needle when they were all kids, and that was on speeder bikes. Somehow that little detail had slipped his mind. Despite assurances that all would be well, that he was a perfect pilot, the Darklighters would not budge. But he had an idea. Luke Skywalker could race in his place. Immediately, Luke wanted to do it. He was almost consumed by the idea. He was the best flyer of his friends, and that was with less practice than they got. He could win this, in Biggs's Skyhopper, and that would be a victory for them both.
Uncle Owen?
Luke asked quietly. Owen was monitoring the readouts on the collection computer, seeing how much moisture each evaporator had produced, what was collected and what was lost, how efficiently they were working. The results were seldom good, though it had rained twice at the beginning of the year. Owen didn't stir when Luke said his name. His hair was mostly gray now, and it occurred to Luke that he was looking at an old man. When did that happen? His uncle had always been so big, so gruff and scary, strong and unable to be intimidated.
Owen?
The man spun around, startled.
Oh, Luke. What is it? What's wrong?
Wrong? Nothing. I just need...
Did you get that battery exchanged? The one on the...
North End? Sure, I...
Not that one. The other one. The one with the crack in it.
I...
Luke sighed.
I guess not. I went out to the East Ridge this morning, but I couldn't see any cracked batteries.
Owen stared at him, as if trying to judge whether Luke was lying or not. Luke always tried to be honest with his surrogate parents, but sometimes it was better not to say anything.
You looked at all the batteries. All 4.
4? I only saw 3. 1 had sand in the cell, but it wasn't cracked.
3, right,
Owen said. But he knew damn well how many batteries, evaporators, collectors, reservoirs, pumps, and droids he owned. He must have been testing the boy.
Okay, that's good news. For a change.
Luke took a deep breath.
Got a little more, I think. I have the chance to race over at Beggar's Canyon during the eclipse. Arno Skuvla is letting anyone enter, with no fee.
Race? With your sandhopper?
Owen asked, shaking his head. The sandhopper was, for all intents and purposes, a child's toy, and wouldn't make it through any canyon without stalling. Owen smirked.
Or my land speeder.
Neither. Skyhoppers only.
You don't...
Biggs and Tank do. Biggs's parents won't let him race his T-16, but he said I could use it.
That's a trusting friend you have,
Owen said, though the way he inflected, it didn't sound like a compliment.
And why won't his parents let him race?
Luke paused. The truth? Or some variation thereof? Or...
Biggs has pretty weak grades this semester. His parents want him to qualify for a scholarship, but it looks like he...
Owen interrupted.
And it's not because they're afraid he'll wreck that nice hopper of his. Or, more importantly, that he'll get himself killed.
Biggs is a really good flyer, sir. He's never wrecked a vehicle a single...
Which is more than you can say for yourself. Or your buddy Tank.
There was no arguing with that, so Luke didn't try.
And Tank's parents. They're okay with him racing.
They...
Luke nodded his head.
Well, they took some convincing. But when he told them what the prizes are...
Owen didn't bite.
I don't much care for prizes. Unless one of them's a evaporator that rotates its own collectors, fills in half the time, and never breaks down even if a dewback lays its eggs in it.
Luke smiled at that. It had been nearly 6 years since the dewback incident, but Luke was still delighted that such a thing could happen, and actually named the hatchlings before they were taken to the market and sold.
Afraid not.
When is this race? When is this race?
So far, Owen hadn't said no, and hadn't started lecturing Luke on his responsibilities. This was a truly exceptional day.
When is this race?
It's on Winter's Day.
Owen thought about it.
Needle Canyon or the Loop?
Again, Luke was tempted to lie. The Needle was a pretty straight stretch, fun and safe. The Loop, however...
Loop.
Owen put his hands on his hips. The lecture was coming. Luke let his breath out softly. He didn't know why he'd ever thought this would work. Maybe he could get somebody at Anchorhead to vouch for him, pretend to be his parent, and...
Your aunt is going to be harder to convince, Owen said at last.
Beru was hard to convince. Almost impossible. But Luke said something about having a feeling he could do this, that he could win, and that he'd regret it forever if he didn't try. And Beru actually seemed to consider that.
Tank's parents are all right with this,
she asked both her husband and nephew.
Guess so,
Owen muttered, focusing on his eating.
You have them hollow me, today or tomorrow, she said.
Hollow? Owen asked, thinking of the expense. Don't you think that's a little much?
I want to see their faces, Owen. If they truly think this isn't dangerous for their boy...
Who isn't as bright as Luke is...
Owen threw in. Another kind word? This might have been Luke's greatest day ever.
If they assure me it's safe, then maybe, maybe, you can race. Thanks, Aunt Beru!
Luke exclaimed, standing up and hugging her.
I'll get the dishes tonight.
And you'll do them again tomorrow. And you'll do them again tomorrow,
Owen growled,
whether she gives you permission or not.
Yes, sir.
Tank's father didn't like Owen. Few did. So it was Tank's mother who spoke to Beru, and Luke only heard part of their conversation. He was standing in the doorway, listening in as the adults had their talk, the static from the Lars's barely functional transmitter obscuring every fifth or sixth word.
Apparently, Tank thought Luke was the galaxy's best flyer, and only wanted to do this to give Luke a chance. Luke's mind reeled at hearing that.
Vesta? Beru asked, her voice serious. Did your son convince you of this? Or did Luke? He can sometimes be persuasive, without even meaning to, and...
She glanced back, and Luke didn't duck out of the way in time.
Run along, Luke. Fix my milk dispenser.
He went into the kitchen and looked over the machine. It seemed fine, but there was a short in the refrigeration unit, easily fixed without even using tools. He finished quickly, then turned to sneak back and listen in on the women's conversation. Owen was standing in the alcove between the kitchen and the supply room, cleaning a treadwell motor with a filthy rag.
Your aunt's going to agree to this, Luke. But if you get hurt, she's not going to blame your friend's mother, or me, or even you and your foolishness. She's going to blame herself.
I won't get hurt, Luke began, but Owen cleared his throat. Owen spoke even softer than before.
You're all she's got, son. You understand? I'm no good as company, and her one friend moved away. You're her family. She will let you do this because she cares about seeing you happy, and because, frankly, it's a hard life we've got here.
Luke nodded. It was a hard life, and he hated it here, in the desert, facing the same problems every week that the last week gave him, and the entire year before that. He longed to go back to school, or join the academy someday and become a pilot, or simply stow away on some freighter at Mos Eisley spaceport and let it take him away.
You understand what's expected of you, here on the farm. You seldom do it, and always have a million excuses as to why, but...
Luke interrupted him.
This is different, Uncle O...
Owen interrupted him right back.
You're damn right this is different. You understand what's expected of you in this race, too. And you follow through. No questions asked. If someone else shows off with their flyer, you hang back and let them. If you have the chance to win this race, and maybe hurt yourself or someone else, you will not win the race. Do I make myself clear?
Yes, sir.
Good.
Owen looked beyond Luke at the milk dispenser.
Tomorrow, when she turns that on, will the milk be warm or halfway frozen?
It'll be just right, Luke promised. But now he was a little paranoid that he hadn't fixed it properly, and that he should check it again. He'd wait until his uncle had gone to bed, though.
Good,
Owen said again, and turned to leave.
Now pretend to be surprised when Beru talks to you.
I will.
They spent the next few days planning and overhauling the two Skyhoppers, though Biggs's was pretty new, pretty high quality. Luke was a natural at the controls, and though Biggs had trouble banking, either turning too sharply or too gradually, Luke seemed born to fly. Tank joked, more than once, that Luke would be a better pilot blindfolded than most pilots who'd been flying for decades.
But don't try it, okay?
Biggs asked Luke, only half-joking. They did have a bit of luck when one of Fixer's friends told him about an abandoned Imperial craft 3 hours away, in a part of the desert even sand people wouldn't go. And Fixer told Tank. They took their two Skyhoppers and flew over, although Luke knew he was supposed to be getting back to his end-of-day chores, and touched down on a ridge just as a deadly sandstorm petered out below them. There were only two pairs of goggles between them, and Luke and Tank handed them back and forth, trying to find the crashed ship on the scanner. They discovered that it was one of the H-shaped Imperial fighters, one that had been damaged and simply left by whatever convoy it had been part of. It had two ion engines, one burnt out and the other clogged with sand. The Imperial propaganda touted that these craft were top of the line, amazing, almost romantic personal fighters. But upon actual inspection, they were cheaply made, non-hyperdrived cockpits and engines made for speed, but not comfort. They didn't seem to even have a minimal shield generator. But its engines were nice, even though one was damaged beyond repair. Still, within an hour,
They were able to get it out of the fighter and load it aboard Biggs's skyhopper. Luke had to be dropped off to face the wrath of his uncle, while his two friends spent the night trying to connect it to Tank's hopper. It was a noisy, shoddily produced engine, making a sound when engaged, not unlike a Bantha in labor pains. But Tank was able to get it installed right above the regular engine, where the heat regulator usually sat. It nearly burned out the whole system when they first tried it, but by connecting all of the hopper's cooling hoses to the new engine, leaving the old one essentially doomed, the vehicle had suddenly doubled its speed. Luke and Tank raced across the open stretch of the eastern dune plains, and it was all Luke could do to keep up with him.
"And I didn't even open it up all the way,"
Tank exclaimed, happy to have finally gotten a leg up in anything. But Luke looked into his friend's eyes and, completely seriously, said,
"Hey, don't. When you get out there, don't open it up all the way."
"Yeah, right."
"I mean it. Control is better than speed in a race like the Loop. Don't sacrifice your finish line in place of passing the competition."
Tank blinked, surprised at this rather grown-up attitude and the look on his friend's face. But he was not unmoved.
"Okay, man. Okay."
Owen was tired, as he found himself more and more now that he was no longer a young man. Luke, however, seemed to get stronger and more spry every time he looked at him. He was a good boy, and not lazy, which would be deadly out here in the Outer Rim. But he was also a dreamer. A dreamer, in a place as bleak as this, could be almost as bad as laziness.
They'd had a hired hand 2 years before,
one Owen couldn't even remember the name of now, who'd filled Luke's head with stories about space adventures, piloting through desperate situations and exotic faraway worlds. It was the last thing Luke had needed to hear, since Owen and Beru had tried to keep the youth grounded, realistic, and safe. Even on Tatooine, the news of the Empire's misdeeds sometimes reached their ears. The details of the sadistic henchmen who dispatched violent justice on those who opposed the ruling fist of the galaxy. Beru sometimes had trouble believing the stories. But Owen didn't. He'd seen firsthand what a criminal underworld could accomplish on a little desert planet like this one. How much worse would a vast army of soulless death squads with limitless resources be? No, Luke needed to be humble, to know his place, to, somehow, accept farming as his destiny, and be happy with his little corner of the world. He'd discovered recently a love for speeders, of literally flying in the face of danger. What the boy needed was a girl, someone who would keep him at home, keep his gaze from the stars, or even from the cities on this world. Hopefully, that would come soon. In the meantime, Owen and Beru would worry, and bury themselves in work, so as not to have time to worry quite so much. The trio of friends went out to the canyon on one afternoon, after Luke awoke before sun's up to get his rounds done, and made a dry run on the Beggar's Canyon loop. It was a winding, multi-level arroyo that sometimes was wide enough for two sand crawlers to push through, other times got so narrow you'd scrape the sides of a land speeder, even one of the new, sleek models. "All right," Biggs said before they got in their hoppers. He was going to ride with Luke to make sure his friend could handle the controls.
"We're going for accuracy on this, not speed. We'll see how hard it is at half speed. Don't worry about the time."
The other two boys agreed, but didn't really pay him any mind. They figured going half the speed would be too boring to continue for long. But it was much, much harder than they had anticipated. From the wide edge of the canyon to the spot at the end where there had, legendarily at least, once been a lake, was nearly 27 kilometers. Not terribly far, if it had been a straight path. Which it wasn't. In a way, it was more of a maze than a canyon. But that made the attraction of racing it all the stronger. At one point, the trail split right in two, and Tank took the left fork while Luke took the right.
After meandering, the right fork simply stopped at a canyon wall, as though purposely put there to crash into. The Skyhopper wasn't going terribly fast, of course, but Biggs's eyes had grown 3 times their size, and when Luke turned around and doubled back, was still talking about the dead end, as though it had been a crate dragon lair they'd nearly flown into. They calmed ahead to Tank to tell him to wait up, but he laughed and pointed out that, half speed or not, this was still a race. Luke and Biggs flew on, watching how the path ahead rose and fell, and the canyon walls closed in dangerously from time to time.
"They say this was all made by water eons ago," Biggs observed.
"Sure, and the Emperor was once a poor kid like us."
Biggs started to explain how water was supposed to be able to eat away at hills and mountains when he saw the suns reflecting off of metal up ahead. Luke slowed again before Biggs told him to, and they discovered the remains of at least 2 Skyhoppers, or perhaps a shuttle. The wreckage was charred and mangled, probably picked over by scavengers, though Big did see a fully intact landing gear they could have probably scooped up and installed on Tank's hopper.
"Look at that," Luke said, pointing as they cleared the wreckage. "Is that a wing stabilizer?"
"Yeah, standard issue. It might still be usable."
"It's Tank's,"
Luke whispered. Biggs tried to glance at it again, but they were already past the wreckage. The trail turned too sharply there, and it was obvious what had happened to the burned shuttle. But if it was Tank's, where was...
There!
Both boys said at the same time. Up ahead, Tank's Skyhopper sat on the rock, leaning awkwardly to one side. There was a long gouge in the sand behind the craft, where it had skidded to a stop.
"Tank!
Tank, are you okay?"
Biggs asked into the communicator.
I did something to the wing,
their friend's voice said back to them, sounding puzzled and embarrassed.
Started shaking for no reason.
Not for no reason, said Biggs. We saw the...
I managed to land her good, though.
That you did, Luke said, and set down the T-16 right next to the clunkier Skyhopper. Biggs hopped out and went over to look at the damage. Tank still hadn't got what had happened. Turned out he hadn't quite cleared the pile of wrecked flyer back there, too focused on making the turn. He loaded into Luke's hopper, and they went back and got both the wing stabilizer and the junked landing gear. Working together, they got the wing fixed enough to keep the little ship flying and headed back to Anchorhead, Luke following Tank just in case something went wrong again. Tank kept talking the whole flight, complaining about how his craft was handling and cursing every time it started to wobble. It took a long time to get back, and both Biggs and Luke agreed that the wing was probably ruined. Tank was out of the race, unless a miracle happened. But Fixer, their mechanic friend, offered to replace the damaged wing with the one from his old man Skyhopper in return for half the winnings. If he didn't win,
"Well, then I'll just take your hopper," drawled the mechanic.
He was only a few years older than they were, but he had been on his own since he was 11, and it made him tough and mean.
"Ha ha," Tank said, raising his eyebrows in triumph. "If I lose, it'll be because I crash it."
None of the others saw the logic in that victory. There was still one more conversation Luke had to have with his aunt and uncle about the race. Tank had apparently mentioned to his parents that the prize Luke really wanted was the trip to Alderaan, and Tank's mother had apparently mentioned it to Beru.
"Why would you want to go to Alderaan?"
Beru asked him over breakfast, where the milk was cold but still in a liquid state.
"Why would you want to go anywhere?" Owen threw in.
"They say Alderaan is beautiful, with waterfalls and mountains where..."
"The desert is beautiful," Owen muttered. "The quarry, the salt sea, even Jundland is..."
"Is it Alderaan you want to visit?"
Beru asked, ignoring her husband.
"Or just any planet that's not this one?"
"Yeah," Luke admitted.
"The second one. But still, Alderaan is completely peaceful, a world full of poets and artists and people who..."
"Tatooine is peaceful," Owen insisted. "We've never been to war with anyone, for as far back as the history books go."
Luke wondered if Owen had ever seen a history book.
"You're right. It probably hasn't changed in 1,000 years.
Owen was sharp enough to recognize that as a condemnation of their little home.
There's nothing to see off-world, young man. Other planets may have their oceans and their snowfields and their cities, but they have all the same problems as us.
Luke doubted anyone in Alderaan had to clean sand out of his ears and nose first thing every morning. Beru spoke up.
Your uncle and I went off-planet once. Did I tell you?
Luke had never heard that before. As far as he knew, they had lived their whole lives right here in the Dune Sea.
It was when we were young, she went on. And it was exciting, yes. But we couldn't wait to be back here in our little corner of the world. Where did you go?
Corrado, Owen said. It's where we got the big generator.
Corrado, Luke repeated. It was two populated planets away. One of his schoolmates had been from there and spoke with a funny lilt, like on long-wave broadcasts.
Didn't agree with either of us, Owen said. Imperial stormtroopers everywhere, uppity droids, and everyone with an angle, everyone looking to scam or betray or fight every stranger they meet.
Did my father go with you on this off-world trip?
No, Owen said. This was after.
After he died?
Just a grunt in response. Owen didn't like talking about Luke's father. He had made that clear many, many times before. Beru simply said she knew little, didn't remember, but Owen had a problem with the subject. He must not have liked the man, or they had a falling out, or perhaps he blamed himself for Skywalker's death. But he wasn't talking.
Does that sound exciting to you, Luke?
Owen asked, his tone a little softer.
Here, people leave you alone. Here, you work hard and you are rewarded. What's yours is always yours, and nobody will try to take it away from you. Beru, have you ever seen an Imperial stormtrooper on Tatooine? Ever?
Well, there was that time at the spaceport when you were getting the evaporator upgrades, she began.
He frowned, displeased she hadn't just shaken her head.
That ship was just refueling. It shouldn't count.
Imperial stormtroopers?
Luke asked, with a combination of curiosity and dread.
Did they talk to you? What were they like?
Those types are ones to shoot first and talk later. I was happy not to draw their attention.
He smiled, about as warm as he could get.
That's why you should like it here. It's hot and sometimes dangerous, sure, but you will never open your door and find white armored thugs standing there, ready to confiscate your property in the name of some faceless military leader. You hear me, boy?
I guess.
You guess. Luke, one day all this will be yours. By that time, we'll have doubled our output. You'll probably have a wife, maybe even children of your own. And you'll hopefully be wise enough by then to know that there's nothing better than what you earn from the sweat of your back. But there are others who don't understand that, and are more than happy to snatch it away from you.
This was the most communicative Uncle Owen had been in a long time, and Luke wasn't sure whether he liked this talkative version, or if he preferred to just hear, "Because I said so," and leave it at that.
I appreciate that, sir.
Luke knew that the man valued respect and hated to be argued with. But there was one more thing.
But I didn't mention, there's also 11,000 credits in prize money.
11?
Luke shrugged.
It's 12 officially, but the Hutts get their take.
12,000,
muttered Owen. Twice.
Luke,
Beru said quietly,
is there really any chance you can win this? You're really good with that dune hopper of yours, but against grown men, people who race all the time. I don't know how to explain it, Aunt Beru,
Luke said slowly, carefully.
I just have this feeling I ought to do this, that I can win it all.
At that, both adults shared a look. Luke wished he understood what it was about, but he suspected he would never know.
All right. That was the first half of Beggar's Canyon. I'm going to end it right there. I don't know that that's the most dramatically strong place to end it, but it's kind of a halfway point, and it's funny. I've been writing a long time, but I still don't know what you call segments of the story that have, you know, like a little ellipses between them. You know, whether those are just portions, whether those... I mean, I understand what a chapter is, but if you don't have one, two, or, you know, chapter two, or any of that stuff, what are they called? And in most of my short stories, I don't do chapters. I just do ellipses. So, that was the first half of Beggar's Canyon. I don't know how much I should talk about it. We can talk about it if you really want to. Oh, I... For a moment there, I thought there was actually someone listening. And not just someone listening, but like someone who would answer. That's really sad, isn't it? But I will say this, and then I will let you go your way. This story, if I had to guess, I'd say I've written, well, more than 100 stories. But let's say I've written 100. And I would say that Beggar's Canyon is in the top 99% most fun stories I've ever written. There have been one or two that were pretty close. But oh my gosh, just to be able to write in this world that I love with these characters and also just make things up too, you know, speculate, that sort of thing. That is, oh, it was a blast. I mean, I hope that it comes across on our Delusions of Grandeur podcast how much I love Star Wars, how much I love the Star Wars trilogy, because the prequels didn't please me in that way. Some of my devotion has paled. Some of it has shrunk. And, you know, there's other stuff. There's the special editions, you know, the tinkering and retinkering, the jiggering and rejiggering that have happened to those movies. And every time there are new additions, it bums me out, it bothers me, and it also perplexes me. Things that have been changed. I understand taking a bad special effect and making it good. For example, the Wampa puppet that they used in 1979 never looked right, which I think is probably the chief reason that Wampa subplot, those scenes were cut out before Empire was released. But then the Wampa that they created in 1996 for the special edition, you know, it could do more. It looks much more alive and more real. I can understand, quote unquote, fixing that. But other stuff, you know, where it was changed for political reasons, it was changed for reasons to tie it into the prequel trilogy, or it was changed for no good reason. Those are always such head scratchers, and it bums me out that those exist. But even with those changes, I still have so much love for those three movies, for the child that I was when those movies came out, and for the child that I become when I talk about those movies or hear the soundtrack or they're playing somewhere and I watch. They're truly, I guess timeless is the word I want to say, but there's got to be a better word. There's something that I can revisit forever. I never get tired of them. I notice something new every time I watch those movies. I have changed, so new points of view, new things that I notice, new things that I feel. And you all know how The Force Awakens was, if you are listening to this in 2016, or you're about to know, because I'm going to try and release this right around the time of that new movie. I hope that it makes me feel the way that I did as a child, but it's difficult. I was a child. I had never seen anything like that. Now I am jaded. Now I'm old and alone and kind of miserable, and wow, I have seen it all, guys. There's not a CG effect that blows my mind anymore and makes me go, wow! You know, they really got a guy with no arms and legs to play that part. It's just part of growing up. But when I was a boy, around 10 years old, I believed in all this stuff. Now, I was immature. Maybe you were 4 or 5 years old, or 3 or -4, when you saw the Star Wars movies. And by the time you were 10 or 11 or 90, you had outgrown them. But I was an immature 9-year-old, 10-year-old, and I swallowed it hook, line, and sinker. I believed in this world. I was swept away. I wanted to know everything about the world. I wanted to live in a galaxy far, far away. And, you know, it doesn't exist. But it does in my mind. And so I was able to visit a tiny little corner of that galaxy with this story. And I feel like I've talked enough. I will try and come back with the second half not long from now. And I hope you enjoy this episode and the one that follows. Take care. This has been Rish Outfield. Good night.
Oh, it's so pitiful. Do you realize that the Rish Outcast is produced under a Creative Commons Attribution No Derivatives 3.0 license? The state of the world today. Good night.